Welcome to the Crime Scene Time Machine. Just a little bit of housekeeping before we get into the official introduction to the episodes. We have now started a Patreon account, patreon.com/crimescenetimemachine. And if you enjoy our episodes, we would ask you to make a contribution. A cup of coffee costs $8. And I don't know how many times you stop off at Starbucks and get a large cappuccino or something like that. If you think our episode is worth $8 or $5, we would ask that you make a contribution. We are a nonprofit organization, and your donations will be used to create further educational episodes. So if you're interested and you want to help us out in improving how we deliver our episode to you, I would ask you to go to patreon.com/crimescenetimemachine and make a donation of $8. We appreciate any consideration. Thank you very much. And now let's start the show. Welcome to the Crime Scene Time Machine. As always, I'm your host, Scott Roeder, and welcome to the show. This is episode number 51, and I think it's not a coincidence that this is episode number 51, as in Area 51, which of course is where the secret control group, or should I say, the military and scientific arm of the CIA has been hiding the evidence of extraterrestrial life since as early as 1948. Of course, hailing from Cleveland, Ohio, one of the greatest locations in the nation, the Emerald City, we're not that far from Dayton, Ohio, which of course is near Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Currently, I am broadcasting live from behind enemy lines in the shadow of Eglin Air Force Base near Destin, Florida. And the reason I'm bringing that up is to tie the connection between the scientific and military arm of certain intelligence and defense-oriented governmental agencies with regard to their clandestine operation to discourage the crowdsourcing of people who want to verify the extraterrestrial reality on planet Earth. Now, recently, in collaboration with James Quirk and with the support of great listeners like Gray Owl and everybody else in the ET Reality Army, as well as the Crime Scene Time Machine Nation, we've been looking at the Las Vegas alien encounter from May 1st, 2023. Recently, I believe that we provided what should be to the greater community incontrovertible evidence of some sort of beings, whether they're extraterrestrial or extraterritorial, I think is irrelevant, but some sort of beings that have different appearances and abilities, both in their physical form, in their ability to manipulate perception, as well as modes of transportation. After an extensive analysis and spending thousands of dollars of my own money in research, we, I believe, have convinced a large number of people that anybody really who's digested the material in full, that this is to a degree of scientific certainty, to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty, that there are beings of some sort that corroborate everything that Angel Kenmore and his family have stated. It has corroborated the oddity of this meteor quote unquote, that came down the moments before the 911 calls in Las Vegas, Nevada lit up the switchboard. We have a verified and valid and non-disputed police report from the Las Vegas Police Department, who believe that this is credible. We have a video evidence. We've had that video evidence analyzed. And I've even circulated this video to reputable people in the field related to ufology, reached out to a number of people. I'll call them out now. Richard Dolan, Kurt Jaimungal, Russell Brand, Ross Coulthart, and others to pick up on this story and put it to the crowdsourcing peer review process. I'm happy to have any debunkers out there that, like Michael Shermer or any of these other guys, Neil deGrasse Tyson, so on and so forth, Avi Loeb, even. And your science, computer science division, I call you guys out to look at the evidence in its totality, both from a journalistic standpoint, scientific standpoint, and the technique that we used, to prove, I believe, I'm confident that, it will uphold scientific standards of a working hypothesis and working toward either supporting or disproving that hypothesis. Certainly, I have nothing to gain here. I have not made a penny on the Crime Scene Time Machine channel. We are a non-profit organization, so we don't run advertisements. We do take subscriptions, and if you want to support us, please feel free to go to patreon.com/crimescenetimemachine. I give you my promise that every penny that we are donated, we will apply toward the educational process of trying to figure out not only cases like this, but just general discovery of things that are hidden from the view of regular people. You know, I think as you guys know, who've listened to the Crime Scene Time Machine podcast over the years, this being episode 51, that we've spent a lot of time on exposing some crimes that have been perpetrated on individuals. But I think more so, it's the crimes perpetrated on society, right? It goes back to the very first time I decided to do any kind of a podcast, and that was as I was investigating the assassination of John F. Kennedy, right, in 1963. And once it's clear, and it's clear, it is proven beyond any reasonable doubt, and I don't think that there's, I think Michael Shermer, even him, at this point, would have to recant his observations about Lee Harvey Oswald being a lone gunman and get on board with the overwhelming scientific consensus, if we're going to talk about consensus, that John F. Kennedy was killed by a conspiracy of individuals. Furthermore, we believe, and I believe the scientific community and the research community at large, with, for example, Richard Dolan and a number of other journalists and researchers, like the dark journalist DJ himself, a legend in my book, one of the most censored journalists in all of the alternative media world, with his amazing research and interviews with people like Jim Mayes and so on and so forth, has proven that it was, in fact, the CIA. You know, one of the things that I was confronted with when I went on Surviving the Survivor podcast, Joel Waldman and his beautiful, beautiful mother, and I love their show. They're good friends of mine, and I love them, and I hope they're both happy and healthy and well. I know Joel has a book that just came out, so look that up, Joel Waterman. He's a terrific guy. I even went on their show, and And I was confronted, kind of sandbagged, by this guy, Michael Shermer, who I'd never heard of before, because I'm not on Twitter. I don't do social media. I've got my podcast. I do my crime scene work, and I kind of stay out of the fray of the chit chat with the peanut gallery, right? And one of the things that he asked me, well, who would you arrest? Who would you prosecute over the John F. Kennedy assassination? And I would say Alan Dulles. That's who I would say. I would say Alan Dulles. And generally speaking, the CIA at large, and listen, the CIA has a reputation of being assassins. Come on, it's not even a secret. It's just out there. This is what they do. They operate against the American people in plain sight. And so am I surprised that the reaction to the verified evidence, I believe scientifically proven evidence that there's an extraterrestrial reality or extraterritorial reality or some kind of phenomenon related reality that we've proven in the Las Vegas alien case from May 1st to 2023 has been less than a whimper. Like almost no response. Getting very few views, I think 5,000 total views on that scientific video. Not one alternative news agency that allegedly investigates the ufology situation even feels that it's journalistically up to their standards to even discuss it, let alone do a feature on it. To me, suggests a co-option by the CIA with the alternative media. Because it doesn't fit the number one and only narrative that the CIA is forcing the alternative media to cover. And that is the threat narrative. And who can we specifically point out as a member of the CIA, probably still active member, but former member of the CIA, none other than the mayor of Area 51. Christopher Mellon, that working class hero guy, just scraping together his pennies best as he can to garner any resources, taking donations, I'm sure, to his non-governmental, non-profit agencies and so on. The goodness of his heart is just trying to warn the people that the ETs are bad. And you know what? The ETs might be bad, but it's probably not for the reason and the ones that the Christopher Mellon Group tells us. Clearly, Christopher Mellon is running an operation. He's even admitted he's running an operation. If you go back to the, I think, February 2024, not that long ago, he gave an interview to Gizmodo magazine where he says, and I quote, "If it wasn't for my direct involvement with the Washington Post and handing them a file, a thumb drive, handing them a stack of papers, introducing them to Lou Elizondo, that this would have never, ever been in the headlines in December of 2017." And also, I think it's extremely important to note that it was a deal. He even says, and I quote, "I made a deal with them to publish this story." And I'm going to call out all of my journalist friends, Ross, Ed Gallick, all you journalists out there. If a governmental agency or a former spy comes up to you and gives you this amazing story, but they offer you a deal, do you take it? I would say that is criminal if you do take a deal because that does not adhere to journalistic standards whatsoever. But however, the alternative media has refused to ask the tough questions of guys like Lou Elizondo, refused to ask the tough questions of Christopher Mellon and David Grush. And if I had my opportunity to ask those three guys questions, they would be these questions. Do you still work for the CIA in any capacity? Okay, that's the first question. Or any military intelligence? Okay. Or any military? Are you still under the direction of a governmental agency? Would be my first question. Second question is, if you are still under the influence or running some kind of a narrative of the CIA, or the Department of Intelligence or the Department of Navy, would you lie to the American people if you were ordered to do so? And my last question, or my third question, I would say in the series of introductory questions would be, do you have a moral problem, an ethical problem with lying to the American people and pushing some sort of a narrative in any way that might not 100% reflect the actual truth? Would you have a problem with that ethically or morally? And that's where I would start off the conversation. And guys like Christopher Mellon, listen, this guy's control, his family controls over $2 trillion. And I know nothing that I say is going to drop into the well and make even the tiniest of ripples to make a difference. And that's not even why I'm doing this. I had a much more hostile podcast queued up for you folks today, and I might release that to just the subscribers on my Patreon channel. So if you go to patreon.com/crimescenetimemachine and subscribe for only the price of a cup of coffee a month, $8, you will see this unedited, unfiltered, exclusive, explosive video where I knock out, TKO, to steal and borrow and homage the great dark journalist. That guy is a hero. It's funny. DJ, the dark journalist, has, and listen, I'm not going to pretend to be him. His research skills are outrageously fantastic. And he's certainly one of the most censored journalists in the entire world, short of Julian Assange. And you see, listen, folks, this is a very, very important thing. Remember this. And this is true not just with the UFO or with the CIA, it's true with everything. When you identify who it is you're not allowed to criticize in public, you're getting close to the truth. When people come at you and attack your character, that means they can't attack your content. You're getting closer. Okay? You're cooking with oil now, baby. But if you're agreeing to these friendly meetings with, these former spies, and they're buying you dinner and drinking beers, and it's not adversarial. Listen, journalism is an adversarial business. I'm used to adversarial. I'm a crime scene expert. I testify in front of a jury, and then I have a Harvard-educated lawyer trained to rip me to pieces on the stand. It's adversarial all the time, every time it's adversarial, okay? And we have an adversarial system of justice, and we should have an adversarial system of journalism. Door stopping a guy accused of murder is great, but you need to door stop the government agency accused of spying, deception, working in the shadows, manipulating the media, manipulating the truth. That's who needs the door stop. That's who needs the man to come around. And am I angry about it? A little bit. Yeah, am I disappointed that people really don't, care, or that people really haven't moved the needle on the extraterrestrial Video evidence. Yeah, I got to give a huge credit to James Quirk. This guy's a great journalist. He's a great guy. And he, matter of fact, we had a we recorded a podcast together, which I'm gonna bury. As a matter of fact, I might actually only list it with Jim's permission, because it's pretty it's pretty rough. It's not rough. We hit some points that I wouldn't make in public. Why? Because I don't want to get attacked for the truth, right? But maybe we'll put that up on the patreon.com/crimescenetimemachine. If for the price of a cup of coffee, $8 a month, we'll give you access to it. Okay? If you want to see it, we'll make it available for you. I'm sure Jim will be okay with that. You know, I've been warned by my family and by my friends and by some coworkers and colleagues. Hey, Scott, don't go after the CIA. Don't even mention them. You'll get on their radar. I'm already on their radar. I'm friends with people who are clearly, obviously working with the CIA, and we even joke around like, yeah, they're listening to our phone calls. Who cares? You know, whatever. Like I said, we're not causing enough of a ripple to make a difference. But, you know, maybe we convince 5 or 10 people out there that they should be a bit more critical of the, you know, ET phenomenon and so forth. You know, I think Jim on his ver Jim Quirk in the Quirk Zone, ET Reality on Spotify, YouTube, his most recent episode lays out in painstaking detail why the Las Vegas alien case meets the Carl Sagan standard of extraordinary evidence to verify an extraordinary claim. And I agree with him, it does. But why will this video not be attacked by any debunkers? Why will this just be ignored by the journalists? And I'll tell you one thing. It won't be attacked by debunkers because there's nothing to debunk, because we did it. Okay? But why? So the only other strategy would be attack me or attack Jim. We're not big enough fish to attack, so they're not going to do that. So the third strategy is ignore it. And that's what's going to happen. They're going to ignore it. Maybe 5 years from now, 3 years from now, somebody's going to stumble on it and go, oh, hey, maybe he was right, you know, or maybe they were right. Maybe, or maybe it'll go down like that Turkey video from 2008, which clearly shows ETs sitting in a spaceship. I like the term ET because it could be extraterrestrial, it could be extraterritorial. It could be, you know, it's they're just extra, right? I've been told that before by some girls. You're extra, Scott. We love you, but you're extra. You know, you make us have to take some Prilosec, and we don't need the Prilosec. And maybe that's what this is. Maybe we're being extra here. Maybe the verification of actual aliens in an actual video that it was actually verified is just too much extra. Too much Riz, you know, they can't handle the Rizzler, baby. I'm a Rizzler. I'm a midnight Rizzler. Get my Riz on the run. Maybe that's it. Maybe they just can't handle the Riz. Can't handle the truth. You can't handle the Riz is what it is. Because the Riz is where it's at. All right, that's funny. I'm glad I'm taking more of a joking, jocularity tone when it comes to this episode. But since we've proven beyond a reasonable doubt that the ETs, at least in the backyard on May 1st, 2023, is video evidenced and verified by multiple independent sources that just coincidentally all have convergence into the truth of all been verified. And by the way, Homeland Security is also still investigating that case. Remember Homeland Security? They came to the Kenmore family's house and they put up cameras, you know? Yeah, not for no reason, guys. Okay. So since we've proven the existence of extraterrestrials, there's no doubt about it. Vindication Day is here. Boom. I'm cleaning my hands up. Here it is. Moving on to a different subject. And in the second part of the show today, We are going to be talking boxing, but not just boxing, celebrity boxing, celebrity exhibition boxing. And are there some lessons to be learned and possibly history repeating itself? Okay, here's where we're going to start. The greatest of all time. Oh, yeah. Well, that was Randy Savage. I'm so pretty. You can't hit me. I'm too fast. Muhammad Ali, baby. The formerly known Cassius Clay, Louisville, Kentucky, USA, baby. The great, the one and only Muhammad Ali. One of my heroes of sports and competition, and personally, one of my heroes of morality. He gave up his undisputed world heavyweight boxing title in protest of the Vietnam War. Okay? This guy was a great man and was acknowledged late in his life by the world about how great he was. Remember that day? He, by surprise, I think it was the Los Angeles Olympics, lit the torch. Oh my God, that made me cry. Still to this day. And when he died, I cried. But how does that relate to the second part of the boxing story we're going to talk about in the show today? Well, Muhammad Ali, as an older man, holding on to his career, fought Larry Holmes when Larry Holmes was young and in his prime. You have to remember, Larry Holmes, we're talking about three of the top three greatest boxers of all time today. Muhammad Ali, Larry Holmes, and Mike Tyson. Okay? So, and how are they related? Well, at the end of Muhammad Ali's career, he was beat up to within an inch of his life by Larry Holmes when Larry Holmes was a young man. Larry Holmes went on to hold the undisputed heavyweight championship of the world for a decade or longer. We can look it up and put it in the show notes. One of the best heavyweights ever. His left jab was up, and he was 6'9". I mean, this guy was the one of the best boxers of all time, period, hands down. Would murder anybody out there today. Same with Muhammad Ali. Would murder anybody out there today. And Larry Holmes beat Muhammad Ali to within an inch of his life. But then when Larry Holmes was old and gray, with half a tooth left in his head, he fought a 21-year-old Mike Tyson who revenged what he did to his hero, Muhammad Ali, and almost decapitated Larry Holmes for 12 rounds, and embarrassed Larry Holmes, putting him permanently into retirement. And then Mike Tyson became one of the greatest, if not, I'd say top three greatest boxers in the history of the heavyweight division. And now Mike Tyson, at the age of 58, is going to be putting his legacy on the line to fight YouTuber turned pro boxer from Cleveland, Ohio, Jake Paul. Okay? Pretty interesting stuff. And my question to everybody out there, and I'm going to call out my former boxing coach, Joseph Del Real. What's up, brother? Shout out to Striker's Gym in San Gabriel Valley, California, Los Angeles. Joseph Del Real, Striker's Gym, former professional Muay Thai boxer, Muay Thai boxing coach and trainer, personal trainer to the stars. I met Joseph Del Real. He coached me in boxing for about 4 years, and we had the best routine we ever came up with. We call it peanut butter and jelly. Okay. That's just for you, Joe. Okay. So Joseph, coach, I want to hear you in the notes and the comments on this show, brother. Is Mike Tyson make a mistake by fighting this 26-year-old Jake Paul? Jake Paul's got some skills. He's got some skills. Sure, he's got the big time wrestler quality, but that's all entertainment today. You look at big time wrestling, The Rock and Joe Cena and Dusty Rhodes and Andre the Giant and the Hulk Hogan and the Rhea Ripley. It's all big time show business, right? It's all big time show business. Biden, big time show business, you know. Listen, for the State of the Union, they get they had Joe Biden so joked up on this drug called Storm. You know, he's out there wagging his finger like he's a young man. Okay. So everything's a performance now today, folks. So Jake Paul, even though he's a performer, he's probably more of a big time wrestler than he is a big time boxer, but he's still 26 years old, fighting a 58-year-old man. What do you think out there? Will Mike Tyson suffer the same embarrassment that his hero, Muhammad Ali, suffered? Will Mike Tyson be embarrassed like he embarrassed Larry Holmes? Or will Mike Tyson overcome like Rocky Balboa did in Rocky VI? Will he overcome and fight the good fight and show that age is just a number and you are only as tough as you are in your heart, in your mind, and in your soul? Remember what Rocky Balboa said? It ain't how hard you hit. It's about how hard you get hit and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. You know, it's about can you marshal up the resources you got in the basement, inside, you know, to go out there and give the big fight. Will Mike Tyson garner the spirit of the late Apollo Creed, Carl Weathers, and Rocky Balboa, and be you know, listen, the last thing to go in a man is the strength. I know, I'm 53 years old. I'm not as fast as I used to be. You know, my defense might be a little slower than it used to be, but I guarantee you, I still hit hard. I might even hit harder now than I did then, right? And I'm 53. So I guarantee you, Mike Tyson still has the ability to hit hard. And if he catches Jake Paul on the chin or in the kidneys or in the liver, with a hook or an uppercut or something like that, Jake Paul is done. So the question is, will Jake Paul stand and fight? Because you know Mike Tyson's coming straight ahead. He ain't dancing. He's 58. He smokes a shit ton of weed and does mushrooms all the time. You think he's going to be able to go 12 rounds? No. Mike Tyson's going to be able to go, you know, two, three, four rounds at max and have a chance, right? He doesn't have that endurance, you know, like a 26-year-old man. He's got that 58-year-old man endurance, which is going to be about three, four rounds, right? If Jake Paul sits still long enough for him to hit him, or is, I think the better strategy for Jake Paul is, you know, dance around for three, four rounds until Mike Tyson's tongue starts popping out of his mouth, then engage him. But are you going to go toe to toe with Mike Tyson before he gets gassed? Or are you going to run around the ring and get him tired before? I mean, that would be the strategy. Run around the ring and get Mike Tyson's tongue hanging on the floor before you engage him in any substantial way. So I guess that's what we got for you here today, folks. And you know, as always, I love you, planet Earth. And until next time, be cool. All right, bye.